The sudden burst of AK-47 gunfire pierced the calm of a perfect spring afternoon, unleashing panic in the parking lot of the Guadalajara airport. Seated in the passenger seat of his white Grand Marquis, Cardinal Juan Jesus Posadas Ocampo, the Archbishop of Guadalajara, was struck 14 times as he arrived to meet the flight of the Papal Nuncio. The 66-year-old cardinal slumped toward the center of the vehicle, blood running down his forehead. He had died instantly. The Grand Marquis was riddled with more than 30 bullets, and his driver was among six others dead. Who would possibly target the Archbishop, one of Mexico's most beloved Catholic leaders, for a brazen daylight hit? The truth appeared to be altogether more prosaic. It was reported that Cardinal Posadas had been caught up in a shooting war between the Sinaloa and Tijuana cartels, feuding for months over the lucrative Plaza drug smuggling route into Southern California. Posadas had been mistaken for the leader of the Sinaloa cartel, Joaquin Archivaldo Guzman Loera, aka El Chapo, who was due to arrive at the airport parking lot in a similar white sedan at around the same time. News footage of the Wild West-style shootout flashed instantly around the world as authorities and journalists scrambled to make sense of the carnage. Helicopters buzzed overhead as police confiscated about 20 bullet-riddled automobiles, including one that contained grenades and high-powered automatic weapons, reported the Los Angeles Times on its front page. The daylight assassination of Cardinal Posadas rocked Mexican society to its core. President Carlos Salinas de Gortari arrived immediately to pay his condolences and calm the nation's nerves. The airport shootout would prove to be a turning point in modern Latin American history. For the first time, the Mexican public truly took note of the savage nature of the nation's drug cartels. Most Mexicans had never heard of the diminutive Sinaloa capo, whose alias made him sound more comical than lethal. After Posada's assassination, crude drawings of Chapo's face were splashed on front pages of newspapers and magazines all across Latin America. His name appeared on TV nightly, wanted for murder and drug trafficking. Realizing he was no longer safe, even in his native Sierra Madre backcountry, or in the neighboring state of Durango, Guzman reportedly fled to Jalisco, where he owned a ranch, then to a hotel in Mexico City, where he met with several Sinaloa cartel lieutenants, handing over tens of millions in U.S. currency to provide for his family while he was on the lam. In disguise, using a passport with the name Jorge Ramos Perez, Chapo traveled to the south of Mexico and crossed the border into Guatemala on June 4, 1993. His plan apparently was to move stealthily with his girlfriend and several bodyguards, then settle in El Salvador until the heat died down. It was later reported that Chapo had paid handsomely for his escape, bribing one Guatemalan military officer with $1.2 million to guarantee his safe passage south of the Mexican border. In May 1993, around the time of the Posada murder, I was 1,500 miles away, in my hometown of Pattonville, Kansas, diagramming an intricate pass play to my younger brother. We were Sweetness and the Punky QB, complete with regulation blue and orange Bears jerseys, huddling up in the front yard against a team made up of my cousins and neighbors. My sister and her friends were dressed up as cheerleaders, with homemade pom-poms shouting from the sidelines. My brother, Brant, always played the Walter Payton role. I was Jim McMahon, and I was a fanatic. Everyone teased me about it. Even for front yard games, I'd have to have all the details just right, down to the white headband with the name Roselle, which I'd lettered with a black magic marker, just like the one McMahon had worn in the run-up to the 1985 Super Bowl. None of us weighed more than 100 pounds, but we took those front yard games seriously, as if we really were Peyton, McMahon, Singletary, Dent, and the rest of the monsters of the Midway. In Pattonville, a town of 3,000 people, 52 miles outside Kansas City, there wasn't much else to do besides play football and hunt. My father was a firefighter and lifelong waterfowl hunter. He'd taken me on my first duck hunt at age 8 and bought me my first shotgun, a Remington 870 youth model, when I turned 10. Everyone expected I'd become a firefighter, too. My great-grandfather, my grandfather, and three uncles had all been firemen.